Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to episode 111 of Geek Time Radio. I'm back this week with Matt.
Hi, David. How you doing?
I'm right. How are you?
Yeah, I've had a good couple of weeks since my birthday. Sorry.
Good.
Yeah, been pretty good.
Excellent. What have you been up to?
What day was it? I think it was last week on Tuesday. At some point last week, the Guardians of the Galaxy game came out.
Oh,
the
yes.
First episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, did you try that?
I haven't played it yet. I might wait until it's all released and then do it. Otherwise, I end up forgetting about them because I've still got to go back and finish the Batman game as well. And So I think with the Telltale games, I'm going to start waiting until they're all released and then just buy them.
Okay.
Do it that way.
So yeah, I played the first episode of that. It was not as, I don't know, maybe I just had played, sometimes you can have too much of a good thing and I played the Walking Dead episode 3, I think, that came out the other day. And so it was almost like a bit too much Telltale.
Right.
And sometimes the episodes can be like a tiny bit slow. And with this being the first, the very, very first episode of the Guardians of the Galaxy game, it was maybe just a little bit slow, but it was still pretty, it was still pretty like funny and quite fun because that's like, sort of where the characters are because they're like sort of the funny ensemble, whereas like the Avengers are the more sort of serious Marvel ones.
Yeah.
So I played the first episode of that. That was pretty good. And the film's out next week, isn't it? It's out on Thursday.
Yes. So, there are reviews kicking around for it as well at the moment.
Yeah, so. I've seen that there are reviews kicking around, but I haven't seen what they are.
So yes, far. I know. I'm avoiding reviews as well. I'm just going to go and see it.
I would like to know sort of just the consensus, like how good was it sort of thing. So maybe I'll look that up after this. But yeah, I'm going to hopefully go and see that next Friday. So looking forward to that. I started a series last night on Netflix. It's called Girl Boss. Have you heard of it? It's
pretty new. I haven't looked at it. Only came out this week, slightly earlier this week, I think, or end of last week. So, yeah, I haven't looked at it yet. What's it like?
It's about, I can't remember which city it's set in, so someplace in America. But there's this girl, she's living in this apartment, and she kind of realizes she has this eye for fashion kind of thing. And the part of it that I'm interested in is because she sort of starts her own eBay business.
Right, yeah.
And I'm just interested to kind of see where that takes that character. She's sort of used to working for other people, and she like has this job at a shoe shop kind of thing and gets fed up with that. And basically ends up with sort of just her apartment.
Yeah.
So she sort of needs some money as quick as possible kind of thing. She starts off with buying this really nice jacket from this guy and she kind of bargains with the guy and she gets it for pretty cheap and then she says it's this like vintage whatever sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then she sells it for like $600 and she buys it for like $8.
Right.
So yeah, she makes quite a massive profit on it and then she has this like moment in her head where she realizes like she could maybe do this kind of thing.
Yeah.
I'm definitely not interested in it from like a fashion standpoint, obviously. It's more like what the character does with her business and it's already starting to affect other characters that are in the show and like how she deals with like her love life with the business and how the business affects everything else. So and there's a nice little sort of flashback episode with it. And it explains like why you should care about a particular relationship. And that worked very, very well as well. So I'm interested more from like a character and like a plot standpoint. Not from a fashion point. fashion standpoint. So
yeah,
yeah, it's only like 13 episodes in a half an hour each, and I've watched the first six, so yeah, I've watched quite a bit of it, so yeah, that's been very good, and I'm looking forward to seeing where that goes. So
I'll have to go and watch that.
Prison Break came back
a
couple weeks ago. I just realized I actually forgot to watch it last week, so I should watch that today before the next one. So what did you think of the first couple of episodes, or the first sort of few?
Now, I saw them a while ago, but yeah, because I've seen the first three episodes already, but that I really enjoyed it. I know some people have been a little bit snooty about it, but I mean, it's Prison Break. It's what it always was, I think. You know, it's a bit silly in places, but it's good fun. We still haven't entirely revealed how Michael returned. Yeah, but yeah, I think it's... it's good fun. It's nice to see the roles reversed. So you've got Michael locked up this time and you've got Lincoln trying to get him out. I mean, that first episode, Michael's not really in it very much. You know, it's Lincoln.
No.
It's pretty much all Lincoln. So, I mean, and it's also nice to see them back in those roles and out of their DC roles as well. Because we kind of got used to seeing them in DC with the over-hammy acting that they do in that show. So, I really enjoyed it. I think it's a nice, fun, entertaining show.
Yeah, it's been pretty good. I just kind of think, like, of all the series that could come back, things like Firefly, which we'll talk about in a minute, I'll talk about in a minute, it's one of the ones that didn't necessarily need to come back. It's cool that it has, and it's interesting, but at the same time, it wrapped up a good few years ago.
Yeah, and it did wrap up. I mean, you know, it wrapped up by killing one of the two characters, apparently, or not, as the case may be. But you know, it was pretty final at the time. So you know, I know what you mean. There are other shows that you could bring back that kind of left things hanging, whereas that really didn't.
Yeah. So I'll see where it goes. It's only got 9 episodes, isn't it? So
something like that. It's not that long. It was one of the event series. Yeah.
Be like another thing that we'll talk about. Talk about Star Wars as well. What's the game that you and Mike were talking about last week? The Knights of the Republic?
It's The Old Republic. Knights of the Old Republic was the original BioWare games that they made. And I mean, The Old Republic is made by BioWare as well, but it's their big MMO game that's been around for a number of years. I don't think it's on console. It's only on PC as far as I'm aware.
I did find out it's on the original Xbox, which works on the 360, and I still have my 360, so I might try that.
Yeah, that's probably the Knights of the Old Republic game. Not The Old Republic, which is the MMO. I'm still playing through it at the moment. It's a huge amount of story to get through because you've basically got 10 different character classes and they've all got their own stories. You've got a load of extra missions, which is what we were talking about last week. You can either just play through the character stories or there's a load of extra things that you can do on all the different planets that you go to. There's like, you know, 20 odd planets and you start at level 0 and they're up to something like level 80 or something now. So there's quite a lot to get through. But as Mike was saying last week, once you get out of those original class stories, the newer content is good, but it's the same story for every character you put through it. So there's less replayability the further you get into the game. I've only got one character class all the way through his class story. So I'm starting with, I'm about halfway through with the Imperial Sniper class right now. Okay. So, which is the Imperial Agent, one of the Imperial Agent classes. So I'm going through that at the moment, which is proving really good fun. It's a really fun story to play through. So once I finish that, I may go back and do like a Bounty Hunter or a Sith or one of the other Jedi classes, something like that.
Okay, sounds pretty good.
Yeah, so there's a lot to get through.
Nice. So I might buy that and have a look into that as well. I watched a series that you and Sophie have been talking about quite a bit. A little show on Fox that some people might have been annoyed when it got cancelled. Just might have been. Firefly. I watched the first, I think it's 4, 5, or 6. I think it's at least 5 episodes I've seen. So I'm sort of working my way through those.
Yes.
They're good fun.
Yeah.
Episodes are very kind of funny. I think the last one I watched was when Nathan Fillion's character was in a sword duel.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
It's a little bit like if you take Star Wars, but take all the sort of Jedi and Sith sort of stuff out of it.
Yeah.
So there's still on, like, if you look at the Serenity as like the Millennium Falcon. That sort of situation. They're like traveling around doing different things.
Well, I mean, Joss always said that the idea behind it was it being something like Star Wars, or I can't remember whether it was Star Wars or Star Trek, but I think it was Star Wars, and saying it's the Serenity's the kind of ship that the Empire would just fly back past and ignore, you know, because they're sort of flying under the radar. They're not really, you know, they're just trying to make a day-to-day living, you know. That was sort of the setup for it. So you do have this big Empire-like presence there, but they're not, they're all kind of background, really,
yeah,
more than anything else.
Yeah, it definitely focuses a lot more like on the ship and like what's going on with the different characters and stuff.
Yeah.
So, and what's going on with Summer Glau's character.
That's, yes.
A little bit sort of, I like a sort of mysterious story like that. And it doesn't sort of bug you and like bash you over the head as to say like there's something wrong with this character, but we won't quite tell you what it is yet. It sort of comes up now and again. So
yeah,
that's quite nicely balanced.
Yeah,
that's been pretty good as well. I watched a trailer for Kingdom Hearts 1.5 and 2.5. I think it's like the remixed, remade versions for PlayStation 4.
Right, okay.
PlayStation 3 or 2 games.
Yeah.
I think they were PlayStation 2, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But not sure why I haven't seen more kind of about this game. It looks pretty good. Basically got like, you're playing as a couple of, I'm not sure if they're all Final Fantasy characters.
No, they're
Final Fantasy sort of styled characters. And then you meet up with a bunch of different Disney characters.
Yeah, yeah.
And you have like Donald and Goofy with you as well. And you use this sort of key as like a sword. I mean, like I said, I've only watched the trailer. Have you played any of them?
A long time ago, yes, I played the original Kingdom Hearts, I think. Yeah, I remember them being quite fun games, and it was one of those things that mixed all the Disney universes together. So, you know, I quite like that. I mean, it'd be interesting to see an updated version that throws all the kind of Marvel and Star Wars stuff in there as well.
Yeah, because there's all the licenses, isn't there? So.
Yeah, yeah. Which is sort of what they did with the
Disney Infinity.
Yeah, Disney Infinity.
Yeah.
So yeah, you know, it sort of was a bit that, but had a, you know, more linear and had a sort of definitive plot rather than you kind of making up your own stuff, I guess.
Yeah, but, or playing like set piece things.
Yeah, so, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So yeah. But I remember it being quite good fun. I really enjoyed it. So I'd be interested to see an updated version of that.
Yeah, there was the remix version on the PS4, which I saw some gameplay of, and it looks pretty nice and clean.
Cool.
So I'm hoping to get that soon. And then there's like a chapter 3, which is like the final part,
right,
which has like a prologue to it or something. I'm trying to work out the exact order to play all of it, because there's other little bits and pieces like in between the stories.
Yeah.
And somebody did tell me online, so I'll just go back and read the comment again.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm looking forward to playing those, because you don't see like Hercules or Lilo and Stitch or that lot.
No, often, not in games so, very much, no.
So I'm looking forward to doing that.
Yeah.
Homeland finished, was it last week?
Yes, yeah.
What did you think of the last episode?
I really enjoyed the overall season. I found really good. I think it rounded it off nicely. It's been interesting this season, because, you know, you've not got Carrie back at the FBI or CIA, sorry. You know, so she's sort of still kind of the outsider, and you've got this new president. You had this new president who, it's interesting because Homeland always generally seems to kind of mirror what's going on in America. And obviously when they started making this, they assumed Hillary would be president. So, you know, that's kind of interesting, a sort of alternative reality version of it, you know. But I thought it was really intriguing, because you almost are painting the CIA as the bad guys in this, or sections of the CIA as the bad guys in this.
I mean, there's a couple of scenes where they do sort of ignore what Carrie's like saying, because there's a part in, I think it's one of the middle episodes of this season, when like she warns them about what Quinn is like and what he's sort of been through.
Yeah.
And the agent that she's talking to just sort of brushes it off, and then they like storm the house or whatever.
Yes.
I'm like, yeah, you should have listened. But
nobody listens to Carrie.
No. It's like in, I think it's back in season one, that there was something that she was telling Saul about Brody, and then the evidence came around, and then he was like, yeah, you were right. And she was like this kind of happy, because she has some breakdowns in the show, you could say that.
Yes.
But that particular scene was more of a happy breakdown. Yeah, the show's evolved quite a bit, so into different things.
Yeah,
this is your podcast, so I don't know if you wanted to mention specifics about what happened, but did you?
Yeah, go on. I mean, we can. Spoilers, obviously.
Yeah.
You've not seen it yet.
So what did you think of that person's death?
I think it was inevitable that particular person was going to die by the end of it, because they've got to a point with his character where I don't see where else you could have taken it, because he wasn't going to get any better. So
even his arm was getting better. So.
No, his arm wasn't getting better. He generally wasn't getting better. So I don't see where what else you could have done with him. I mean, for him to go out in a sort of heroic blaze of glory, I think was probably the best way to end that character's run.
It was a good idea, but at the same time, he could have just ducked.
Yeah, well, like, yes.
Like he's sort of staring at the people shooting at him and like driving forward, and I'm like, just duck. I've seen people do it before, and the pedals are at the bottom of the car, so it's not like you have to sit up for anything in particular, but
I know, but yeah
but at least it was more of a heroic death than what could have happened. It could have just been like a sort of shot in the head shock moment, but it worked on some levels, but at the same time you should have just ducked. But, Broadchurch also finished as well.
Oh yeah, now Broadchurch I've never seen a single episode of, but really? I know it's a hugely popular, it's one that I need to go back. The problem is I sort of should go back and watch it, but then I kind of know who did it, certainly for the first one, because I've seen all the spoilers for it, so I'm kind of, well, it's going to lose a lot of the tension if I already know that.
It might feel like a bit more of a grind than usual sitting through that.
Yeah, exactly. So I've sort of, once I had the first season spoiled for me, I was like, well, I can't really be bothered to go and watch it now.
Yeah.
So... but how did it wind up okay?
Because this was the final. Nicely. Yeah, there was not really much else really going on, like in the last sort of couple of minutes. But then that was because they finished all the storylines. So and then we of course got this sort of nice shot at the end as the credits were rolling of like the Broadchurch cliff hill sort of thing, which is like the classic sort of Broadchurch sort of shot. So it ended quite nicely. There was a little bit of a plot hole, I thought, in the final episode as to like the overall story, but I could kind of look past it a bit. So and the last thing I have is I started The Witcher 3 Blood and Wine DLC.
Right, yeah.
And it's quite exciting. The first mission you do, because the game tells you to look at like the notice board, and then there's a particular thing on the notice board that says to Geralt, like, we're looking for Geralt of Rivia to help us with this task, because at this point he's like known for like helping with different things basically. You go and speak to these people, and then you fight this kind of massive troll thing.
Yes.
And he sort of has this like hammer, but it's sort of like circular rather than like a square hammer, and he like really sort of swings it around, so that was quite a sort of fun, fast-paced way to start that. So I thought that was pretty good. Have you played that?
The DLC for The Witcher, I think I've still got a few bits and pieces of it to finish off, but the DLC for The Witcher 3 is phenomenal. I mean, the whole game's phenomenal, but they had an entire extra land for one of the DLCs, so there's a huge amount of extra stuff in that game, and I don't know what my average is up on that, but it's got to be into the hundreds. I would have thought it's just amazing fun, really really good. They totally nailed it for that game. It is a great example of a how to do that sort of RPG, but as we were saying with Mike last week, the thing with The Witcher 3 is they screwed it up so badly on the first one and had to fix it, that I think they've been so careful on making sure that things are fairly well polished going forward. And I'm looking forward to them doing a Witcher 4, because I thought the third one was excellently done, really really good.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few like frustrating enemies and things, but
yeah,
for most of the part, it's a pretty awesome game. So
yeah,
and it's got some very strong characters in it as well, which you need to make a good story. So yeah, that's what I've been doing.
Few things this week. Doctor Who, obviously, back for its second episode this week, which was I think called Smile. I think it was called. Have you been watching Doctor Who this season?
I haven't watched it since a couple of episodes into Matt Smith's.
Okay. You should. You should.
David Tennant.
So, yeah. Now, you should go back, and it's a good point to jump in, actually, to watch Peter Capaldi's final season, because it's really strong this year. I think it's doing really well. The second episode particularly, I thought, was really nicely put together. Classic kind of Doctor Who setup of ends up on a alien planet which is being colonized by Earth, but when they turn up, there's nobody there apart from these cute little kind of robots that communicate using emojis on their face. So it's sort of, you know, them discovering why the people aren't there and what's happened to the people. I thought it was just really nicely put together. Some great tension in it, and, you know, just really good, well-written Doctor Who episodes. And Bill as well, who is the new companion, I think is really good. She's not annoying. She's not, you know, falling in love with the Doctor or anything, any of that sort of stuff. She's just a really good, bubbly companion. So I'm really liking this pair up. I think it's really strong and well worth going to watch if you've been avoiding Doctor Who, because Peter Capaldi's early season wasn't all that strong, and some of the Matt Smith stuff was a bit up and down. Sort of Matt Smith's first season got a bit confusing in places as well. But I think this season's been really strong so far. So I would jump back onto it at this point. It's not like, because the other thing is they've got this overarching story where the Doctor is basically supposed to be guarding this vault on Earth and has been on Earth for the past 70 years. But they've not revealed like what's in the vault, why he's supposed to be guarding it, who he made the promise to guard the vault. All we know is there is something that he's supposed to be protecting. But obviously, being the Doctor, has kind of decided now he's got a new companion, he's off flying around the galaxy, which he's not being supposed to do because he's supposed to be back on Earth guarding the vault. So, I think it's really interesting and very well put together, and you've got this nice kind of decent overarching story as well as the sort of day-to-day episodes as well. So, I strongly recommend going back and watching that. It's been really good so far.
Okay.
Another thing that came up this week as well was a new show called Bill Nye Saves the World. Bill Nye... most people, I don't know whether you know who Bill Nye is. You may only know him from various references and appearances on The Big Bang Theory, because that's probably what he's best known for over here. He was known as Bill Nye.
If I saw a photo of him or something, I might recognize him. So.
He was known as Bill Nye the Science Guy because he had a kids' science show in America. This is a Netflix show.
Oh, I think I know who you're talking about. Yeah.
He wears a bow tie.
For Sheldon and did something for his birthday or something like that.
Yes, I think that's right. Wears a bow tie most of the time. So Bill Nye Saves the World, it's not aimed particularly at kids. It's more a family science show. So he does a few scientific experiments, but each show is based around one particular topic. So the first one was on climate change. To remember what they did the second one on, but he's got one on sort of new technologies and robots, and then one on space travel. And so there are various shows. They're only half an hour long. He has a few celebrities come in and experts in the various sort of fields where he does conversations with them. And it's almost done as a way of trying to educate people that are, you know, people that deny climate change and that sort of stuff. But it's nice and easy. The science isn't like complicated. It's done at a level that could be understood by kids and adults. So it's a really nice little family show that you could go watch. Good for sort of, I would say, your sort of 10, 11 year olds, that kind of age, I would have said.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed it. He's very watchable. The second show they did was on alternative medicines, and how they're basically alternative to actually getting proper medical help. You know, so why homeopathy doesn't work and that sort of stuff. So it really interesting, well put together, as you'd expect from Netflix, and, you know, very well put together show. So
definitely, yeah.
So one worth going to watch if you've got kids and want to give them some sort of educational programming to watch that's also quite fun. I would point them in the direction of that.
I'd just play Lego Batman with my niece.
Yeah. Few trailers that came up this week as well. Marvel's Cloak and Dagger.
I thought it was pretty good, actually.
Yeah. It's quite an interesting trailer because you don't get any idea that it's a sort of Marvel show until about 20 seconds before the end of the trailer. It's very much about sort of teen angst and about Cloak and Dagger are two Marvel characters who are teens, young adults. In the comic books, I think they're actually homeless, but it looks like they've slightly changed the background for this. They're basically two people who, it appears in the TV version, met as young children and one of them saved the other. And then they bump into each other again as teenagers and realize that they have some sort of mysterious power. Dagger's power is that she can create lightning daggers, essentially, and Cloak's power is the ability to shroud himself. So I thought this looked quite interesting. I mean, it's very different to all the other Marvel stuff that's out there so far. It's their first foray into a kind of teen drama. So I think this could look interesting.
I'm looking forward to it quite a bit. It's next year, isn't it?
Yeah, it comes up next year. It's either later this year or next year, but it's not got a UK channel yet because it's not aired in America yet. So
who do you think might get it?
It strikes me as something that would, I mean, it'd sit very well on E4, obviously. That would be quite an obvious place for it. But somewhere like Dave would be good to pick it up. One of the UK TV channels, I think would be quite good. It needs a sort of teen audience. So, I mean, E4 would be the obvious place for it. Or, you know, well, they don't really buy stuff in, but somewhere like BBC Three would be quite good, but
you know,
they tend not to buy that sort of stuff in.
So you could pair it with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. if you could.
Yeah, so, yeah.
This is a January thing usually now over here, and I don't know if it would line up with schedule wise, but
maybe. But yeah, I mean, E4 would be the obvious place for it. I'd be interested to see whether they decide to go for it. The other trailer that came up was Krypton, which leaked online. I don't think it was. They've been saying it's not an official trailer, although it looks pretty official to me.
I didn't know it was a leaked trailer actually. So yeah, that's how real it looked to me.
Yeah. So I think it is obviously. It's got footage from the show and stuff in it.
Yeah, I thought it looked interesting. Not quite as interested as Cloak and Dagger, but it still might be pretty interesting. We shall see.
Yeah, I mean, it's telling the story of Krypton to the two generations before Superman and before it blew up. So they've got a lot more free rein to play around with it. It's much darker than I thought it would be. It's very much a sort of, I think I said when I wrote the description of it, it feels far more kind of Battlestar Galactica than Smallville to me.
Yeah.
It is actually the Smallville people that are behind it. So, you know.
Okay, so you got the Superman.
Yeah,
so
they have the experience of it. But it feels much more in the tone of something like Battlestar Galactica to me. You know, much more darker, kind of slightly more adult thing, which is kind of interesting. So be interested to see what happens with that. Again, that's a potential kind of E4 one, I would have thought. Or Dave, or even Sky, I mean, may go for it. But it doesn't directly link to the other DC shows. So they may want to avoid confusing things by adding that on. Particularly as they're probably going to have to buy Black Lightning if Black Lightning gets fully greenlit. So
yes, yeah. Which I heard that's next end of next year instead of the end of this year for Black Lightning.
Okay, I didn't realize it was that far back, but yes, you might be right. So yeah, I mean, that's been most of the stuff I've been doing this week. The only other thing that we've been talking a bit about on chat and stuff throughout the week was the writer's strike, which I know other people are actually aware, but there is a potential writer's strike going on in or about to start in America again. For those of you of a certain age might remember the last one, which was 10 years ago, which completely messed up a lot of TV shows and scheduling and caused caused havoc. So some shows that weren't doing particularly well, which may have got renewals, got cancelled, you know, and they abandoned things, and you ended up with shows with half episodes, things, you know, or half seasons. You ended up with things getting bumped out the way. So it was chaos for about 3 months. It lasted 3 months last time. The writers are basically striking because of the fact that the number of TV shows have increased in America, which you'd think, that's a good thing because they're getting more work. The problem is that the earnings have decreased by about 23%. So whilst they've got more episodes, they're getting kind of shorter runs and writers are paid per episode. So as one guy was saying, you know, I could write 22 episodes and it could take me a year. I now have a show on Amazon where I'm writing 8 episodes and that's taking me nearly a year, but I'm only getting paid for an 8 episode fee. So, you know, the time that they're given to write the show is longer, but they're still only getting paid per episode.
Mm.
Whereas they might have been writing, for example, an episode a week, they're now writing an episode every 3 weeks. And a lot of the time, the problem is that they're tied into contracts that won't allow them to write on other shows at the same time. So although there is more TV out there, they're shorter runs and they're tied into a contract which won't allow them to write on other things to cover up the difference.
Okay.
Which means that they're forced to earn less money. So that's basically part of the main problem. So they're trying to sort out, basically they want a loosening of the exclusivity rules so they can write on multiple shows at once. They'd like an increase in the fees that they get for scripts for cable and streaming platforms because they're the biggest problem, because they're the places that tend to run 10 episode things, and there are also issues with the health insurance and that sort of stuff which they want sorted out.
That's
the reason for the strike happening. They're currently in negotiations, which they are taking a vote, I think it's either today or tomorrow, to vote whether the union agrees that they can strike, which I think is most likely they will say yes. Then if they're going to strike, it will be on the 2nd of May, I think, is the first day of the strike. So we should know by the 1st or 2nd of May whether it's actually going to happen. Because it's very difficult to tell whether they're going to come to an agreement right now.
Okay. Do you think they will? What's kind of your...
It's impossible to tell right now. Because, the last strike went from 2007 to 2008, took 100 days to resolve. The biggest immediate issue is actually, it doesn't affect us so much. It's more the US because it's their late night chat shows. Because obviously, when you're doing a daily chat show, all the jokes and stuff are scripted. So that's a big problem for them because it means that they can't go out and do monologues. They can have guests come out, but it causes huge problems for those sorts of shows because a lot of that stuff is scripted. Daily sitcoms, daily dramas, so soaps and stuff, they have a huge problem.
Mm.
And things with long 22 episode runs have a big problem because most of the time they're writing and filming at the same time. And what we've been talking about as well is something like Walking Dead as an example. We know they have some episodes written, but they won't have all the episodes written. So it may be a case of if the strike happens, we only get half a season. We don't get a full season.
Yeah.
That's assuming they've written half a season's worth of episodes already.
I think it's interesting kind of specifically with The Walking Dead, because like the differences of Walking Dead and Game of Thrones is Game of Thrones has gone past its books, whereas Walking Dead hasn't even caught up to the books. It's actually still a couple of seasons away at best to get to the comic's current point, maybe two, three seasons, depends on like the show's pacing. I'm assuming Robert Kirkman has some sort of plan as to like when bigger kind of checkpoint things happen in the show, like when Negan shows up and when they go to Alexandria and when they met the other like places this season and last season.
Yeah.
I'm assuming Robert Kirkman's kind of planning ahead a bit with those. I know it's still this case of like having the writers, but in terms of like the story's plan, I'm gonna kind of assume that him and probably Scott Gimple have some kind of idea as to when they want to hit those certain points. So.
Yeah, I mean, things will be laid out. The problem is that you get two issues. The one issue is the fact that the scripts just aren't finished yet. And regardless of whether they've got a story to work from, in terms of, like you say, with The Walking Dead, they have got books that they can work from. They still have to write a script based on that. So although it might make life a little bit easier for them, if the script's not there, they can't shoot it. On top of that...
Would it be a possibility that like the mid-season finale could be the season finale?
Yes.
And it could be like awkwardly written?
Yeah.
That's sort of like what happened with Heroes, because I did... at the time when I watched, because it was the second season of Heroes that was affected, and there was... it was when Peter, in the show, he was played by Milo.
Yeah.
There was like this serum that the characters were after, and it was a case of whether or not he picks the serum up or not, and like that would like dramatically kind of change the story. So it's kind of those issues that you sort of run into as well.
Yeah. I mean, there were a number of shows that were affected last time around. Supernatural got a shortened run. I think it only did 16 episodes that season. I remember Bones very rushedly finished that season as well, which wrote out Zach, one of the characters. I seem to remember that was that season. So there was a few issues that, you know, that popped up. It even affected things like Breaking Bad as well. So, I mean, you know, AMC were affected last time. It's very difficult to tell exactly what's going to happen. I mean, it's just going to be a case of wait and see. I do hope they come to a deal, because it's such a pain when it happened last time. And, you know, but it is their right. It is their right to do it, and it caused huge problems for the industry as well last time. So
yeah, because not only does it sort of cut seasons in half, it also changes like stories and maybe makes the show worse, and then ultimately gets things cancelled.
Yeah, so, exactly. Yeah. And there were a few shows. I remember that one of the casualties being the remake of Bionic Woman, which wasn't doing brilliantly in the ratings, but they kind of said had they managed to get a full season out of it, then they may have managed to pick up and carry on. But because the writer's strike happened, it kind of got chopped after about 8 episodes. And they decided not to bother with it again. So, you know, there are issues that come up. Certainly, if you're a freshman show, you're going to have problems. It also, I mean, we won't see any immediate effect here, because obviously things that are shooting now that have all their scripts written will still come on over the summer and stuff. Where you're going to see a real problem is in the autumn and into early next year.
Yeah, because like when certain things shoot in the summer and stuff.
Yeah, because it means that everything will shut down for probably, well, if it goes on the same as last time, it could shut everything down for 3 months. But you know, it's not only the writers that it affects everybody working in the film industry, because it affects all the actors, it affects movie production, although there is a story come out now that said the MCU, the Marvel Universe, isn't going to be affected by it. But it can affect film production, it can affect TV production. Obviously, it puts people out of work, so all the actors are out of work, all the, you know, the particularly if they're tied to certain shows.
So you can't go to work because their scripts haven't been written. So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, your cameramen, your directors, you know, all these people are out of work. But it also did produce a few little interesting things. Things like Dr. Horrible, like little side project that Joss did, was done as a direct result of the writer's strike. You know, there are little things that sometimes come out of it, because people kind of aren't writing for big production companies, so they go and do their own little thing. And you may see some of that, but... Yeah, it's going to be tough if they decide to go on strike and if it carries on. So we shall know hopefully by next week. We should have a better idea about whether it's going to happen or not.
It's interesting with Walking Dead and Game of Thrones, because those two back in 2007, those two weren't even on TV. So your two, I would say probably the two biggest shows, those two like weren't affected at all, because you know they weren't even around. So
yeah,
this season of Game of Thrones should be fine. It you said it might be like the next season that might be.
Yeah. I mean, obviously the season that's coming up in July is in the can already. So that's, you know, they're doing post-production work. So that's all fine. It's the next season. They will probably be shooting that in winter anyway. So we might be okay, because
it's coming.
Yes, because winter is coming. That's the whole reason everything is delayed this year for Game of Thrones, is because they needed colder weather to shoot in. So you may find that the next season of Game of Thrones gets bumped if this drags on, if it happens and it drags on. Hopefully that won't be the case, because it chances are it's shooting late enough. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. We'll have to wait and see. But yeah, it does make life very, very difficult.
Yeah, we shall see what happens. So
on that note, let's move on and do some film and TV news. First bit of film and TV news this week, we have one renewal, but it's a fairly big one. X-Files. Mm-hmm. X-Files is back for an 11th season, and it's up from 6 episodes, which is the 10th season, up to 10 episodes for this new season. Happy to see this back?
I've never seen it, so yeah.
Did you not watch the 6 episodes when they were on?
No. I was just... It sort of just went right into the background of my mind. And I didn't hear particularly great things about it either.
Well, the thing is, when it came back and did those 6 episodes, some of them were great, some of them were utterly ridiculous. I mean, really, really ridiculous. But that's sort of what the original series was like. It veered widely from being some very brilliant, brilliant dark episodes to being some of the stupidest TV you could watch. And you sort of love it for that, but it's done the same thing. It did the same thing when it came back for its 10th season. So we'll be interested to see what they do for season 11. Yeah, I mean, I loved the original series. I know you've not gone back and watched it. And as we've talked about before, it's very up and down, and there is a hell of a lot of original X-Files to go through.
There's what, 9 seasons and then there's like two films or something?
Yeah, 9 seasons and 2 films, and the films aren't particularly great either. So I'm happy they brought it back. I'm glad they've managed to sort it out. Mm. Gillian Anderson is incredibly busy at the moment because she's also on American Gods as playing the god Media on American Gods. There's that, and there's also various films she's doing and guest spots on other things. So, I mean, there's all sorts of stuff. So she's fairly busy. I'm not sure what else David Duchovny's up to, but I'm glad they've managed to pull
together. Yeah. I can't remember the last time I saw him on something.
Yeah. I'm glad they've managed to pull them back together. I think that could be quite good fun. Talking of things coming back, this, I'm guessing you have no idea what the significance of the original show.
I don't. I saw your tweet and you're like, with capitals, and they're making Monkey. I was like, what is this?
Yeah, so Netflix are remaking Monkey. Now, anybody under the age of 40 probably has no idea what that means.
That'd be me.
Monkey, yeah. Monkey was a Japanese TV show, which was in the late 70s, early 80s, and it was called Monkey, or it was also known as Monkey Magic, because the theme tune was had the words Monkey Magic in it, so a lot of people knew it as that. It's actually, I mean, Netflix, we've called it a remake, but really it isn't. It is a retelling of Journey to the West, which is a classic Chinese 16th century novel, which has been used over and over again in Chinese cinema and film and TV, sort of pretty much, you know, repeatedly for the last like 20 years or so. There have been various big screen Chinese language versions and stuff. So this is the first kind of attempt at a fully westernized version, because the original Monkey series wasn't in English. It was dubbed. And in some respects, I think that's why it's so beloved in the UK, is because, you know, people that remember it as part of their childhood. And it was this weird little show which was dubbed over in English. You know, quite badly. I mean, yeah, the acting was fine, but it was this sort of dubbed over in English, and it was obviously done in the early 80s on a fairly shoestring budget. So the story is about a young girl who teams up with 3 gods that are called Monkey, Pigsy, and Sandy. And there is a young girl called Trippy Tacker, I think her name is. trips up on that. Trippy Tacker, I think the girl's name is. She teams up with these 3 gods, and they're trying to end a demonic reign of chaos, which has sort of taken over the world, and restore balance. So that's the basic premise of it. It's a sort of standard Chinese fable. Monkey is the sort of lead hero god out of all of them. And then, you know, Pixie and Sandy are the other two that are sort of side characters to him. And there's the four of them together that are trying to save the world. But it's one of these things that's been around for a very, very long time. And it's beloved by a lot of people. There was a few people kind of, when I posted this, it got a ridiculous reaction, particularly on Facebook when I posted it. Some people going, oh my God, this is genius. And other people going, oh my God, how could they? This is awful. So it's very divided people. It is also kind of westernizing, a classic kind of piece of Chinese fable, literature. So they're very mixed reactions to it. But it begins filming. It's 10 30-minute episodes. It's already started filming in Auckland, in New Zealand, because, you know, if you want somewhere that looks like a mystical, beautiful land, where else are you going to shoot? It's going out on ABC in Australia, who are the people that commissioned it, and it's TVNZ in New Zealand, and then Netflix have got the rights for it around the rest of the world, so it's a co-production between the three of them. The thing that people remember most from Monkey is the theme tune, though, so it would be nice if there was some reference to that at some point throughout it, because, you know, that's the thing that people love about it.
Okay.
But it's going to be one to watch out for, definitely.
How do you sort of feel about subtitles in things?
It depends what it is.
Yeah, a lot of people that I talk to really don't like subtitles.
I can
deal with it, sort of thing.
Yeah, I can deal with it, and I've watched a few things with subtitles. It doesn't bother me. You've got shows like Narcos where you're jumping in and out of subtitles throughout, and that doesn't bother me at all. I mean, they do that in Star Wars, for God's sake, as well. So, entire shows that are entirely subtitled, I honestly don't watch that many subtitled things, but...
Me too. Like, I think the last one I remember is maybe The Returned.
Yeah.
Whatever it was called.
But, I mean, there are great foreign language shows out there.
Oh, yeah, and there was the Locked Up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Channel 4, which was pretty good.
Yeah. Going back to Star Wars, as we just mentioned, then there's an interesting development which sounds incredible coming to Disney World Orlando. So it's not directly film TV related, it's more kind of theme park related, but I it sounded so awesome I thought I put it in. It sounds like this is only going to be at Disney World Orlando, and they are kind of gauging exactly whether they're going to do it or not at the moment, so this isn't entirely fully confirmed. But they've announced that, I mean, they've already announced that they're building Star Wars Land, which is going to be a new part of the theme parks, and that's going to be in Disneyland, California, and Disney World in Orlando. So this is going to be an area which is, it's not modelled directly on any of the destinations in Star Wars we've already seen. It's going to be a new port, and it's described as being somewhere which is kind of off the mainstream path. It's where smugglers and bounty hunters and the rogue adventurers are looking to crew up, people that won't want to be found. So, you know, it's basically all the interesting people. So it's kind of designed to be this kind of scummy little port that they're building, but it will have the Millennium Falcon part there. So they're going to build these Star Wars lands. They'd already announced that. What really is interesting is they're looking at the idea of building a starship themed hotel actually within that bit of the park. So it's not going to be any ordinary hotel. What they're actually doing is it's going to have 2-day story driven entertainment experiences, they're calling them. It's basically live action role play for 2 days, which are based within the hotel and within this Star Wars Land park. You can go and pretend to be in the Star Wars universe for 2 days, and you can go on flight training, you can explore the ship, you can go on lightsaber training, you can get personalized secret missions off people around the park, you can be on the starship, and they've got like pictures of how the interior of the starship is going to be. So I'm assuming they're putting like, you know, space things around the outside rather than windows and stuff, so you do actually feel like you're in space. So it'll be there and on the actual planet itself. This just sounded amazing to me.
Yeah, this definitely sounds really cool. I mean, with the hotel and the live action story stuff.
Yeah.
I don't see why a Star Wars fan wouldn't go. So.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I did something that was, I mean, on a very different scale to this, on a much more low budget scale. But if you remember a few years ago, Secret Cinema did a version of Empire Strikes Back. And in that, they recreated the whole of Tatooine inside a warehouse in London. Big section, not the whole of Tatooine, obviously, but a big section of Tatooine inside this warehouse where you could go wandering through and buy food. And there was the bar and, you know, the cantina bar. So you could go in there and order drinks and stuff, and everybody stayed in character, and you had R2-D2 wandering around, you had stormtroopers wandering around and Imperial officers. And that was for one night and was so brilliant and such good fun. The idea of that being done on a massive scale, officially licensed by Disney for 2 days, where you can completely immerse yourself in it, I think sounds incredible. So, yeah, they're talking about it costing $1,000 for 2 days, but that would include the stay in the hotel as well. So that's £500 a night, basically.
Mm.
Which, you know, given everything, and that's the passes into that bit of the park and the hotel, and I don't think that seems
unreasonable.
Like an
all-inclusive.
Yeah, so that includes meals and everything. So that, I don't think, sounds unreasonable. You know, $500 a night it is. So I'd be well up for that. I mean, obviously, you've got to get over to Orlando to do it, but that sounds incredible. So yes, one to watch
definitely,
out for.
Yeah.
See if that does actually happen, but that's one to watch out for. They're talking about 2019 before that opens.
I'll start saving up today.
Yeah, so start saving now.
Yeah.
And last little news story, Strike Back is coming back, as I think we've mentioned a while back, but Strike Back is going to return for a season 6, but with an entirely new cast. They've said it's coming soon. We don't know exactly when that means. I'm assuming that's either late this year or early next year that it's going to arrive. Sullivan Stapleton and Philip Winchester both are gone. The premise for this setup is that the Section program had been disavowed and abandoned, but then a notorious terrorist performs a brutal prison break. So they pull the various people of Section Division back together in order to track down the escaped convict. The new team, because obviously Sullivan Stapleton is too busy on Blindspot, and Philip Winchester's just got a new gig in Chicago Justice. So those guys aren't coming mm-hmm. back. So there's a new team. It's led by a guy called Daniel Mac McAllister, who's played by Warren Brown, who played Luther's sidekick in Idris Elba's show. He was the other cop in that show.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
so yeah, so the younger guy in that. So he's taking the one of the leads. The other one is playing Sergeant Samuel Wyatt. He's Damiel McPherson, who's been in the Shannara Chronicles. He was in The Bill, an APB, which was a fairly short-lived American show, described as, so he's, I think it sounds like McAllister is going to be more the Stonebridge character, and Samuel Wyatt, he's going to be rather more the Scott character, because he's described as a barn room philosopher who works best alone and no intention of being dragged into a team situation, but obviously gets dragged into a team situation. So I think he's going to be the Scott character. They've got Natalie Roberts, who's played by Roxanne McKee, who obviously Game of Thrones and Hollyoaks, comes from a military family and excels at psychological profiles, seeking weakness of others. She might be blinded by our own fault lines. You've got Gracie Novin, who is Alin Sumatra, I think, or Sumatra. She was in Neighbours and Home and Away. She's a gearhead looking to make the step up, she's described as. So we don't know when this is coming. I think they've put quite a good cast together for it. A lot of people have been saying, oh no, you can't do it without Stonebridge and Scott. It's not going to be the same without the boys. Bear in mind, this is the second time they've done this, because the first season of Strike Back didn't have Stonebridge and Scott in it. You know, it's not a new thing that they're doing. And I think the team sounds interesting enough. I think they've got some good actors in there. I think that could work well. You've got a Hollyoaks person in there to keep you happy, so.
Yeah. I'm not sure which character she played. I haven't heard the actress's name. Although there's, you know, a good few years of Hollyoaks I haven't seen, so it might well have been somebody before that.
Yeah, she's been out of Hollyoaks for a while, I think. Louise Summers, she played in Hollyoaks.
Oh, I know who that is. Yeah. She died before I started watching it. So
right,
that's fine.
Okay.
But yeah. The character who killed her has come back. So
right,
yes,
okay.
She's the but gets referenced a few times.
Okay. So she's in it. And no exact air date for season six yet. The fact that they've posted something now saying it's coming soon would make me think it's going to be towards the end of the year, either autumn or early next year, maybe. But coming soon would suggest it's going to be later this year. But who knows?
How many episodes has this got?
I'm not sure. I think it's... I don't know whether they've said the episode count. I suspect it's probably 10, but I don't know. So that is all the news for this week. Next up, we have an interview.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This week's interview is a first one for us, actually, because it's the first time we've spoken to a makeup sort of FX designer. This is a guy called Joel Harlow. He's an Academy Award winner. He's one of the most innovative makeup and special effects artists in film today. I mean, his CV is utterly ridiculous. He's worked on Star Trek, Star Trek Beyond, Logan is his latest film. He works on pretty much anything Johnny Depp is in, and we talk a bit about that in the interview. So he's done all the Pirates of the Caribbean movies and the Alice in Wonderland movies. He worked a little bit on Mad Men and on the TV show Carnival. So we get to talk to him a bit about, he's got quite a unique way that he kind of works compared to how a lot of makeup people work. And also we talk quite a lot about designing makeup for Logan and for the characters in there, and how he started working with Johnny Depp in the first place and how they keep their relationship going. When we talked to him, he was actually in Atlanta, and a fairly windy day in Atlanta, so the sound quality is not great in some places, but it was a fairly windy day in Atlanta, so you have to forgive that. But he was on the set of an upcoming Marvel movie. We'll see you afterwards with some highlights for next week. Hey, Joel.
Hey, David, how are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
Good, good.
Thank you for spending a bit of time today to come on and talk.
Oh, my pleasure.
Where are you based? I'm assuming you're based in LA these days.
I am, but I'm in Atlanta right now.
Oh, are you really?
On location, yeah.
Is that on Black Panther? Is that what you're
working
on?
It is, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't realize that was shooting in Atlanta. Avoid the zombies.
Yeah, yeah, right? Yeah, this town is basically Walking Dead Central.
yeah, I can imagine. It's become quite a big filming hub, Atlanta, since The Walking Dead went there.
Yeah, it really has. Yeah, a lot of movies are here now and more coming.
yeah, no, it's very cool for them. So you're on to talk a bit about your work. You're a makeup artist, or prosthetics and that sort of stuff for... your CV is ridiculous.
Thank you.
I mean, it's fantastic. I mean, going back to starting off on things like the Toxic Avenger, or Toxic Avenger 2, which, you know, a great, like...
the ridiculous part.
Yeah. Old trauma movies, which are just amazing. Yeah. Grindstone Christmas, The Planet of the Apes, AI, Inception, Green Lantern, Star Trek, Pirates of the Caribbean, pretty much anything Johnny Depp's ever been in.
Yeah,
Logan, which is the thing you've done most recently.
Yeah.
So let's just start off with a bit of background. How did you get into makeup design?
Well, it all started, you know, a passion for really anything kind of supernatural character related, you know, extra normal character related. Started when I first saw King Kong.
Right.
You know, the original black and white King Kong.
Yeah.
And that, I knew after I saw that, I was, you know, pretty young, saw it with my father. And I knew after that I wanted to do something, you know, in the world of creating characters like that. I didn't know what it was at the time.
Yeah.
Ultimately what I started doing was animation. I actually went to college for animation.
Ah, yeah, that makes
sense. In New York.
Yeah.
But then, you know, then I'd seen The Thing And I knew that that, you know, there was what, you know, I wanted to focus on was sort of makeup effects in that world. But, you know, at the time, there were no schools for it. I mean, now they're everywhere. But,
yeah,
you know, this is like mid 80s. There weren't any. And so I, you know, I, that's why I started, you know, studying animation and, you know, still creating makeup effects and, you know, in my dorm room and that, and, you know, got on the Toxic Avenger, you know, and then, yeah. And then, you know, left school, and just started, doing, low budget films out in California, you know, joined up with Steve Johnson's XFX company.
And, right. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, had about an 8-year run with them and, you know, where I learned a heck of a lot. So
wow,
one thing led to another.
Where does the process start for you? Are you designing like from paper to prosthetics, or are people coming to you with designs and then it's your job to realize them?
It's really, it can happen any number of ways, you know, and it never really happens the same way twice. Sometimes, you know, in the case of Star Trek Beyond, is we start designing characters.
Wow.
Sometimes, you know, they have designs in mind and then we take them and translate them into three dimensions and, you know, practical working makeups. But yeah, I mean, it really just depends on the project and kind of, you know, the workload of the project, how long, you know, in pre-production the project has been in existence, because, you know, a lot of times to get a film greenlit, you know, the production needs to show the studio something.
Yeah.
You know, images, whatever that is. And a lot of times that happens before we come on. So in that case, there are already kind of pre-existing designs.
Yeah.
That we then have to, you know, take and rework and, you know, and make work as practical makeup executions.
But, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it all depends on, you know, really what the workload is and what the project is and, you know, a great many factors.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Specifically, you came on to do Logan. What were your responsibilities on that film?
Well, I was the makeup department head as well as the prosthetic makeup designer. So
right.
Basically anything makeup, you know, I was in charge of.
Okay.
So it was designing Logan and Charles and, you know, Caliban and the rest of the characters, and then executing them, you know, and you know, creating them. If there were any prosthetic needs, you know, we would make them in this traveling lab facility that, you know, that I have with me. And we'd build in one area of a soundstage and apply in another. So it was full circle. You know,
yeah.
Which is nice, because then you're in on the design of a character. You build it, you see it grow, and then you get to apply it and see it come to life, which is always fun.
So
I mean, on Logan, it was everything: prosthetic wounds, you know, severed heads, a couple of subtle facial appliances, you know, fake hair, scars, ran the gamut.
Yeah. I mean, with Logan, obviously you've got Hugh Jackman in there. How much makeup did you actually using on him? Was there stuff to age him up? Because that's a guy that just doesn't age. So.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. He's in amazing shape, you know? Basically what we did, because he plays two characters, you know, he plays Logan and he plays X-24, is, you know, you start with Hugh in kind of the middle of those two characters and you de-age him for X-24 and you add age to him for old man Logan.
Yeah.
And in adding age to him, you know, that's a number of ways you can do that. The way that we did it was with paint and scars and, you know, of course, hair whitening and that kind of a thing. Some subtle contact lenses to take the, you know, the youth out of his eyes. And then to take him to X-24, it's basically a matter of an even foundation, you know, to de-emphasize any wrinkles that may be there already.
Right.
Crow's feet or otherwise, you know, dyeing his hair dark,
yeah,
which gives the appearance of youth. And then the rest is him, you know, selling it.
Yeah. Yeah. Because they've done in previous X-Men movies, they've done sort of digital de-aging stuff. Right. So how much is that sort of CG stuff affecting your work at this point?
Yeah, I mean, all of it affects our work, you know, because back in, you know, the days when I started, you know, CG was a very sort of fledgling art form.
Yeah.
But now it's getting better and better. You know, the problem is, I think that, you know, no matter what you see digitally created, how well it's done, I think most people can pick it out.
Yeah.
And it's kind of gotten to the point where I think it's being overused a bit. And of course, all the digital people will hate me for saying that. But, you know, it takes kind of the magic, you know, because I'm the kid that grew up watching King Kong, right? The black and white, you know, stop motion animated King Kong. And there was something tangible about that.
Yeah.
And I think that if it's that easy to like, oh, let's create a T-Rex and throw it in this scene. You know, it's like the magic, though it's still there, is just kind of lessened.
Yeah.
Because it is everywhere now. I mean, you know, Beauty and the Beast, it's like there's a humanoid character, you know, that has been done many times by different artists brilliantly as a practical makeup.
Yeah.
Which really, I think, creates a connection between you and that character.
Yeah.
When it's entirely computer generated, you're watching a cartoon. And no matter how well it looks, it's still a cartoon.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I'm kind of with you there. I think that there's a tangibility to physical stuff. Because, I mean, I'm in my 40s, so I grew up watching all these sort of films from the Toxic Avenger kind of upwards, you know, where you have this, you know, the physical makeup. And I think it does make a huge difference.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, that it exists and it's existing in the real world.
Yeah.
You know, playing opposite characters. And I think it's, you know, it's beneficial for, you know, actors and crew and, you know, really everybody on a movie set to see something tangible and real.
Yeah.
You know, it's easier to light that way. You can light it within the scene with, so everybody's in the same light, you know, rather than having to match it all later.
Yeah. That, I mean, ultimately, although it may take longer to do in the first place, I guess it probably is cheaper to do it physically than it is than messing around with, because there's, you know, if you're having to match light up, I imagine in some respects it sometimes must be cheaper to do the physical stuff than it is to do the digital stuff.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you know, obviously digital is getting cheaper all the time, but just as an art form, you know, really, you know, I admire, and I play around with ZBrush and, you know, digital sculpting programs, but there's something about practical real that it's like, you know, The Thing. Remember The Thing?
Yeah.
ADI did all of those effects that are in that film practical and real, and they looked amazing. You can see them on YouTube. You watch the movie, and it's like, I mean, you know, a lot of people, myself included, got into this industry because of the original, you know, because of The Thing, you know, the John Carpenter.
Yeah.
You know, and it's because, you know, Rob Bottin then created these makeup effects that were unlike anything we had seen before. And then, you know, ADI did an amazing job at delivering practical makeup effects, you know, that fit within the context of the story and still remain true to that genre. And then they're all replaced digital, and you can tell. It's so obvious.
Yeah.
You know, and it just like, that's not why I like The Thing. That's not why I was a fan. It's not because of that. It's like, why? And I just don't understand not doing the practical. It's like you've got people in charge that aren't fans is the only thing I can think.
Yeah.
You know, that they're not, you know, they don't have the affinity for the work that they should, you know, and in which case, don't mess with it.
Yeah, exactly. One of the characters in Logan, Caliban, Stephen Merchant's character, took me a moment to realize it's Stephen. When you first see him, you'd actually don't realize it, and then he talks and then you go, oh, it's Stephen Merchant. How did you approach the design and build of that character?
Yeah, I mean, that, you know, Caliban appeared in Apocalypse, X-Men Apocalypse,
right?
And in that film he's like very, you know, he's very sort of jestery, you know, and spry, and we the sort of the overall tone of the entire film, Logan, is, you know, it's like a Western. It's gritty. Yeah. It's grounded in reality. It's desaturated. You know, you're not going to find any multicolored mutants. You know, they're all very very human looking. And I think Stephen Merchant was probably as far as we went in changing the skin tone of a character to be a mutant.
Right.
And really all we wanted to do was go for like a more of an albino skin tone, except we took it a little more towards the gray,
right,
just to fit within the context of the world, you know, because these are not happy characters, you know.
Yeah.
There shouldn't be, you know, there is no ray of sunshine. And then, you know, he wore contact lenses, you know, to change the color of his eyes. And we shaved him, you know, we basically shaved him, you know, every day. And then, you know, then he gets, you know, he suffers at the hands of Pierce, Boyd Holbrook's character.
Yeah.
A few times, you know, he gets burned by the sun, you know, and his skin blisters.
Yeah.
For that, we had some silicone prosthetics, you know, that we applied to Stephen and painted to look like he was blistering. And then, of course, he detonates a couple of grenades in the Reaver command vehicle, and after that he's burned, you know, he's almost unrecognizably burned.
So it's a great piece of work, that, because as I say,
you
really don't recognize him when you first see him. So
I mean, a lot of that, I guess, you know, you take away somebody's hair, you know, and change it, you know, it's like you can do things to people, you know, subtle things that really change their appearance. Teeth, you know, dentures are one of them, contact lenses are one of them, and then, you know, you can just, subtle nose appliance will change somebody, you know, completely. And, you know, and hair is one of those things. You take away somebody's hair and all of a sudden you're looking at somebody else.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and then you even out his skin tone so you don't see that there was hair there. You know, there's no 5 o'clock shadow where the hair was.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, it's a smooth skin palette now. Yeah.
What's the biggest problem you generally encounter when working with prosthetics?
Well, I mean, probably the elements, I would think, you know, and if you're in extremely hot or humid situations.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of movement, you know, is going on. Your performers are moving around a lot, and a prosthetic is in a high movement area, like corners of the mouth, you know, neck, you know, that those kind of things.
Yeah.
They tend to, you know, start to break down, you know, your edges start to break down.
Got you.
And our preference is to use silicone. So because, you know, silicone, you know, as opposed to foam latex, which was kind of the staple for, you know, for the beginning of my career, before silicone prosthetics came along. The advantage of foam latex is that it's porous and it can breathe. The advantage of silicone is that it's translucent and you can paint it or tint it as translucent as you want. Whereas foam, you have to paint that translucency into basically a matte, opaque material.
Right, yeah.
But what you sacrifice is that it's not porous, so it tends to heat up, you know, the performer's skin heats up a little quicker underneath it. And if you're in hot situations, you know, then, you know, they could start to sweat, and you know, the only place for that sweat to go is to find its way to an edge and then escape to freedom, I guess. And, you know, that, of course, becomes constant maintenance time.
Yeah, that must have got more difficult with the introduction of things like high def and 3D as well.
Oh, yeah, that and lace work, you know, hair work. There's some things that, you know, you're not meant to see so, you know, so detailed. It's like I prefer, you know, I was at my parents' house, right, watching, I had a screener from the Academy for, I can't even remember the name of the movie, but they have one of these high-def TVs, and I put the DVD in, and we're watching it. And I just couldn't get past the fact that everything looked like it was shot on video. I mean, this is the first thing I had seen on their TV. I was like, well, it looks so cheap. It looks like it's shot on video.
Yeah.
And then we put in the next movie, which I know was shot on film, looked like it was shot on video. I'm like, wait a minute. You know, and I went downstairs because they had another TV downstairs, put the same DVD in, and suddenly it looks like film. And there's something about that richness that, you know, it's like, you know, let's not go so overboard with making everything better and sharper and crisper and dinosaurs jumping off of logs. And it's like, you know, come on, let's hold on to the reality a little longer before, you know, just that line in Jurassic Park, just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Yeah. Yeah, no, exactly. I the one place I really experienced that was, I don't know whether you ever saw the Hobbit movies when they were shot in 60 frames a second. And I don't know whether you ever saw those versions, but that was a real problem that they had on that film, was the sets and the makeup didn't quite make up for the fact that they were shooting at such a high volume. And I'm sort of with you. When I watch it now at home and I'm on a normal TV, it's much nicer in Blu-ray, and
Yeah, exactly. And then you watch the Lord of the Rings movies and it's a completely different experience.
It
just feels right. I don't know what that is, but it feels right.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I know exactly what you mean. As we mentioned earlier, you've pretty much are Johnny Depp's go-to guy for his films. You've done all the Pirates movies, Lone Ranger, the Alice movies, Black Mass. You even did Tusk as well.
Yeah. And Yoga Hosers.
And you did Yoga Hosers as well. I did wonder. Yeah. I'm a huge Kevin Smith fan. So
he's great. Yeah. Kevin Smith is amazing.
He seems like such a nice guy.
Yeah. Oh, he is. Yeah. He really is.
So how did that relationship start?
It started on the first Pirates of the Caribbean movie. I was the key makeup artist to V. Neal's department head position.
Right.
She brought me on to Pirates and a great, number of other films, but specifically Pirates, which is where I met Johnny. And, we did Pirates together, and then with V doing his makeup. And then, of course, we did part two and three, Dead Man's Chest and At World's End. And, he's still with V as department head and me as key. And it wasn't until Alice in Wonderland that I was asked to come aboard and help apply a makeup, his Mad Hatter makeup, with another makeup artist that he works with, like B quite often, named Patty York. So I came on, and after that film was over, he asked me to go do Rum Diary, to handle him on Rum Diary and department edit. And that was really the first movie that I was looking after him specifically, as well as wrangling the entire department.
Right.
And then after that came Pirates 5 or Pirates 4, and then, then all the other ones.
Yeah.
Lone Ranger and Dark Shadows.
And Black Mass, of course, which, he went through a pretty amazing transformation on Black Mass. That was a great piece of makeup, because he really doesn't look like him. when you sort of see it, he's how did you end up approaching that? Because that's much more it's not like out there makeup, it's a much more kind of normal.
That's him. He's a huge fan of this craft of makeup, and he will change his appearance, whereas a lot of performers want to be recognized. Nothing wrong with that, but he will go to great lengths to become a character.
Yeah.
So it was him that wanted the transformation to be as complete as it was. And we actually had transformations that were far more all encompassing, like full facial prosthetic makeups. That was all him. When you approach something like that, where you're trying to translate a real person onto somebody that looks nothing like them. You just kind of pick out the broad strokes that you would need to sell that character in makeup, and obviously the receding hairline was one of them. The nose was part of it, And if we were going for it's kind of a hybrid between James Bulger and Johnny Depp, whereas some of the earlier tests were completely James Whitey Bulger.
Yeah.
With very little Johnny showing. But I think we kind of settled on a happy medium with the makeup that we ultimately went with.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it works fantastically. And it's a great film as well. On the other end of that scale, going back through your list of films, Planet of the Apes, which you're down as ape makeup artist. And I think it was worth taking the job just so you could have ape makeup artist on your CV.
Yeah, I want that on every film, ape makeup artist. What do you mean? He is an ape? I don't understand.
That'd be brilliant. Like some sort of ape assistant.
Like Clyde from, Any Which Way But Loose, or whatever, any which way you can.
Yeah, yeah. So with that film, where do you actually start? Because you are basically creating human or sort of talking apes for a film like that.
Well, yeah, that one was easy because I didn't build the makeups for that. Was Rick Baker.
Okay.
And nobody knows apes better than Rick Baker. Right?
Yes.
What happened was Bill Corso, a good friend of mine, brought me on to assist him in applying Paul Giamatti's Limbo makeup.
You know,
he was the orangutan.
Yeah.
So we did that together, and Bill and I did that makeup. And then days that Limbo wasn't working, that Paul wasn't working, there were background chimpanzees that makeups that, you know, I would do. And the biggest thrill of that was doing a makeup with Bill and Rick on Charlton Heston.
Oh, wow.
As I believe Spade's father.
Yeah.
He came in for one day, but, you know, I was one of the guys that got to apply that makeup. You know, not just on Charlton Heston, but with Rick, which was, you know, that's a high watermark for sure.
Yeah, that's very cool. You also worked with Spielberg on AI as well, which is a brilliant and highly underrated movie. What were you doing on that movie?
I was venial again. It's basically like the pirates. Venial was the department head, and I was her key. So
okay.
I did Haley Joel Osment's makeup.
Yeah.
You know, as well as a lot of other makeups. So, you know, we were on it for the entire show. So we helped design the look of Haley Joel Osment's character and Jude Law's character, and basically handled everybody's makeup in the movie.
How was working with Spielberg?
Oh, it was amazing. You know, my favorite movie of all time is Jaws, you know, so certainly, you know, this is the guy that made it happen, you know, through seemingly insurmountable odds.
Yeah.
You know, he created one of the greatest movies of all time. And certainly my greatest movie of all time. So to work with him, it was a dream come true. And then, of course, you know, I'm working with Stan Winston, who is a legend, you know.
Yeah.
And seeing his work close up. And Stan is just the sweetest guy. He was the sweetest guy.
Yeah.
You know, I feel very fortunate that I got to work alongside him before he was taken.
Yeah, it's such a loss, that, you know, because he
really
was an incredible guy.
Yeah, it really was.
You have done a few TV shows as well. You did Mad Men. You did a couple of little bits on Carnival. You did, which was a wonderfully trippy series, and Buffy, which Buffy, my favorite TV show, one of my favorite TV shows of all time. You including working on Once More with Feeling, which was the musical episode. that must have been fantastic fun to work on.
Well, yeah, I mean it was interesting because it was the first I was brought on to the show to build the prosthetics. You know, they were looking to get another company to build the prosthetics for one reason or another. I don't know what it was, but I was brought, and that was the first one, you know, so obviously we wanted to bend over backwards and make it incredible.
Yeah.
All I really remember about that is just a lot of sleepless nights, you know, sculpting and painting and molding and, you know, minimal crew in a garage. Then you see the finished thing and it's like, wow, that's really neat, you know, because I wasn't there all the time. You know, I was only there for the specialty makeups, you know. So you don't really get the full picture until you catch it on television.
Yeah. You talk about working in a garage there. I mean, the setup you have now, Morphology FX, which is your company, I thought that was quite interesting because you basically sell it as a full service agency, which sort of moves the entire thing onto site, which I guess isn't a common, that's not commonly how it's done, I'm assuming?
No, not at all. I mean, the common method is that a production will hire a makeup effects shop, you know, and there's, you know, I could list them all, but, you know, I don't want to leave one out and have my friends be mad at me, but the way that I've done it and continue to do it is I will take all of my equipment and my materials and what have you, and production will generally get me a facility, whether it's a part of a warehouse or, you know, we worked out of a giraffe cage once at a decommission or a defunct zoo. And we move everything in. You know, as long as it has water and power and some ventilation, you know, we'll build right there on site, which allows production, the director, the other department heads to come by and see what we're doing. So there's no surprises, and approvals aren't done like via FaceTime or photos or emails. You know, they're done in person. So you can see the dimensions of the thing. You can see the color as it reads in person. Your director of photography can come by and see if the translucency is right, whatever it is. And then it's just a matter of, once we build, walking it across the parking lot and gluing it on, and then we take it to set. And what that also saves is overhead.
Yeah.
You know, because production knows exactly how many people I'm bringing, you know, because I give them kind of a rough idea of like, okay, I'm going to need 8 people for 3 weeks, and then I'm going to need 2 people for another 3 weeks. You know, what it is, whatever it is, they pay those people.
Yeah.
You know, I don't pay them. You know, I'm making a salary the same as everybody else.
Right. Okay.
So there's no overhead that production is paying for. There's no profit margin that production is paying for. They see exactly what comes in, and, you know, as far as materials, because they, you know, we order the materials, but they get the invoices.
Yeah.
They see exactly who's working what hours, and, you know, it keeps everything above board. And that allows me to keep the quality, because something that, say, if I was a typical shop owner, you know, and there's a job that comes in that's going to take 4 weeks.
Yeah.
And if I get it done in 3 weeks, you know, I get to keep a little profit, right? There might be a temptation to push that and get it done in 3 weeks. Whereas now, if it takes 4 weeks to make, right, then it's going to take 4 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and it all comes out roughly the same for production, because I'm not taking a profit margin.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not taking a profit. I'm just making an hour. Same as my guys. So.
Yeah.
That's very whereas cool. If I bid it out, I would, you know, I'd build in a contingency, and we'd build overhead and, you know, what have you.
Yeah. That's very cool. So we've established you're working on Black Panther at the moment. I have to ask, is there anything you could tell me?
No. You know the answer to that.
I had to ask.
Yes, of course.
Three red dots just appeared on your chest.
Yeah, exactly. I'm in the parking lot now, and they're like, yo. I heard the name mentioned. Get some people over there. That guy.
So, well, I am really looking forward to that film. It should be awesome. Yeah,
what I can say is it's going to be a fantastic film.
Yeah. So, 2 last questions, which we always ask people. Uh-huh. One of the things is, what TV shows are you watching at the moment?
I'm watching The Walking Dead, of course.
Yes, of course.
I'm a huge fan of
In person, pretty much.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, even from like the first season, it's like the stuff that they were doing on that show, it's like, that's better than stuff I was seeing in features. It's like, way to go, Greg Nicotero and K&B, and, you know, because that stuff is like top notch.
Yeah, yeah. That zombie work's incredible.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, and then, I watched a lot of Family Guy, American Dad.
Right, yeah, yeah.
No, Bob's Burgers. when I get home, you know, after like whatever it is, 16 hours of work, you know, it's nice to watch a cartoon.
Absolutely, exactly.
And unwind and watch a cartoon.
And finally, if you had the opportunity to work on any TV show, past, present, or future, which TV show would it be?
Oh, it'd probably be something in the future, and it would have something to do with, you know, H.P. Lovecraft, something to do with his work.
Nice.
I don't know if it's like, you know, they had the young Sherlock Holmes Chronicles, you know, maybe we get young H.P. Lovecraft Chronicles, where he and August Derleth pal around. I actually wrote that as a kid.
Really?
You know, I wouldn't say I was a kid. I was in high school. I was like, this would be great. You know, young Sherlock Holmes came out. I was like, you know, it'd be cool is, you know, young Lovecraft and August Derleth, you know, fighting the cosmic forces of, you know, Cthulhu and, you know, the rest of the outer gods. Yeah. You know, that would be something I'd be into, you know.
Yeah.
So when they start making that, then, you know, that's the one I want to be on. or another one that, you know, I keep hearing rumor of is Tales from the Crypt revival.
Yeah, I'm sure that'll happen. I'm sure that'll happen at
I
some point.
I sure hope so. Sorry. You know, with M. Night Shyamalan, you know, I've heard nothing but great things about him, and not just the opportunity to work with him, but, you know, I'm a huge fan of DC Comics, and, you know, creepy and eerie and all of those horror, that those horror, like 70s horror genre comics.
Yeah.
And magazines, you know, so it'd be great to be involved in that. And plus, you know, like whatever it is, a monster a week.
Yeah.
That'd be a blast. You know, that's, that was the fun thing about Buffy, is that, you know, it was a new monster every week. So.
Yeah, that's awesome. All right. We've been on for like half an hour and a bit, so I'll let you get on with your day and let you go and do more Black Panthering. So thank you for spending a bit of time. It's been a real pleasure. You're the first makeup artist we've had on, so you know.
Oh, nice. I'm honored.
Yeah, so I'm very happy to talk to you, and I'm looking forward to seeing Black Panther when it comes out.
Thank you, David. It's been a pleasure.
All right. Cheers. Bye. Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
That was the interview with the makeup and effects designer Joe Harlow. I hope you enjoyed all that. Next, we have highlights for next week on TV. Kicking off next week on TV, we have the long-awaited return of Nashville for its fifth season, coming to Sky Living on the 28th of April at 9 p.m. This is a show you watch, isn't it, I think?
Yes, I like it quite a bit. Yes. I have unfortunately had a spoiler for the season, but that's what happens when you run 10, 12, 13 episodes behind.
Yeah.
A bit like with Gotham, that's happened as well.
Yeah.
God knows when that's coming back.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm looking forward to this quite a bit, and I think you posted recently, got renewed, did it,
for season 6? Yes, yeah, it's got renewed for season 6.
Which, got another 2 to go, so that's pretty cool.
Yes, I mean, it's not a show I watch, but I'm led to believe that that's the fact that it got renewed surprised some people, given what happens in season 5, apparently. So, yeah, I don't know, but I don't want to give any spoilers away, obviously, for that.
No, I won't want to do that either, sorry.
But yes, so that's Nashville returning for its fifth season on the 28th of April at 9 p.m. There is a show which has been fairly controversial called Dear White People coming on to Netflix on the 28th of April. It's based on an acclaimed indie film which satirizes the post-racial America as students of color navigate a predominantly white Ivy League college. I've sort of avoided reading too much about this because I want to go into it as fresh as possible. I know some people have got very upset about it, but I'm quite looking forward to that. I think it could be quite interesting. But that's coming to Netflix on the 28th of April, so could be one to watch out for.
There's a lot coming to Netflix in May. Master of the None, I think there's House of Cards, and there's F for Family season 2.
Yeah, there's quite a lot of stuff coming out on Netflix. You've got quite a few bits coming to Amazon as well. You're the Worst season 2, that starts on 5 Star on the 30th of April at 11 p.m, which is a romantic comedy with some darker tones from the makers of Weeds and Orange is the New Black. Then the big show for me, the one that everybody really must watch, American Gods season 1, coming to Amazon Prime on the 1st of May. If you've not got an Amazon Prime subscription, go and get one, or if you've not signed up, then go and sign up for the month-long trial just to go and watch American Gods, because it's well worth it. I've seen the first couple of episodes of this. It's brilliant, absolutely brilliant, and well worth going to see. So,
how many is that? 8 or 10?
Eight episodes in the first season. It's not that long, actually, the first season. Yeah, that's going to be well worth watch. They'll go on weekly as well. It's not all dropping at once because it's running in America at the same time. So it's going on the day after the US.
What's it on in America? Stars, is it?
Stars, yes. Stars have got it in America. So,
I've not heard of that channel before.
Been around for a while. Stars ran Spartacus, the Spartacus series. Okay. They ran all those. So yes, not afraid to show some flesh on those shows.
And I'm sure, what's his name, will be showing his top quite a bit.
Yes.
As he did in 100 and as he did in Hollyoaks. So,
yes. In fact, I think you probably get to see a bit more than his top as well in this. So if you're a fan of Ricky Whittle, then it's definitely one you want to go and see.
Great actor.
Great actor, really, really good in this. Great cast throughout, really well acted, interesting, slightly weird story.
What day is the 1st of May?
1st of May is, I think it's a Monday. Yes, it's a Monday. So it's next Monday. That's
okay, cool. Nice.
And then coming on next Tuesday, on the 2nd of May, is Lucifer. It's back for the third part of season 2. It had quite a big break in the middle of it. And that's Tom Ellis back as the Prince of Hell, who moves to Los Angeles. Just a wonderfully entertaining, fun series, mainly due to its charismatic lead. But and I know it's not an exact copy of the book, but it makes a brilliant TV show. So well worth going to watch.
How much does it take from its book?
The the basic premise of the devil leaving and going to, you know, leaving hell and moving to Los Angeles and some of the character names. I get the impression, I don't know the book entirely that well, so I couldn't tell you exactly, but I, from people that do know it, apparently it doesn't take a huge amount from the books other than the basic premise of it. And even they've changed the basic premise to a certain amount as well, because I think in the books he's mainly a nightclub owner. He's not working with the police, which is kind of the premise of the TV show. So it sort of takes elements, but not all that much. But I think it makes a hugely entertaining TV show, and Tom Ellis is amazing in it. He's so good. Well worth going to watch if you fancy that. I think that's everything for this week, unless you've got anything else you want to add in.
I was going to mention, me and David are wrapping up our coverage of season one of 24 Legacy. We've got two episodes left, which is technically 14 hours, but it's going to be told in 2 hours.
Right.
So that's on entertainmenttalk.org, so go and have a look out for that.
Yes, well. Yeah. If you're a 24 fan, definitely go and listen to that. As for us, if you want to find the latest air date info, you can visit the website at geektown.co.uk. You can get in touch with your questions and comments by emailing us on podcast@geektown.co.uk. You can leave a message on the website post or find us at Geektown on Twitter, on Facebook at facebook.com/geektown, on YouTube at youtube.com/geektown, or on Instagram at geektownuk. That's everything. We shall see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.